Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
And so right.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. And I'd like to welcome you. Today, the latest on health and healing, including new information about when you eat red meat, even in small amounts, you're going to pay a price. And about 15 other important health stories. We review the scientific literature throughout the world every day, finding the information that can really impact our lives in a good way. And we also try to find information you have not heard or seen elsewhere. So it's original. Then today, following that, we'll be doing an in-depth, original investigative report. The CDC and the medical deep state. The article from which I will be sharing information will be posted in its entirety, all footnoted and referenced, medically and scholarly vetted, on PRN.fm today. Tomorrow, I'll be doing another challenge to Wikipedia. We currently have about 30 articles in the works that we're researching, deep articles on why we believe that Wikipedia is not what it claims, it should not be supported, instead it should be investigated. And you'll have a chance to share your thoughts on that on tomorrow's program. Also, every day this week I'm doing some segment, 5 minutes, 8 minutes, on the dangers of 5G communications, which is happening as we speak. Fortunately, there are consumer activists and educated consumers listening who are taking that information and trying to stop the 5G from being put into their schoolyards, which it had been. And also today we will challenge the quarantining of children who have not been vaccinated in Rockland County. We consider it political, we consider it ideological, we consider propagandizing, and without scientific merit. We will offer science, good science, to refute hysteria and the conditioning of the American public to think it is normal to tell parents, if your child's not immunized, we can put them in jail, we can put you in jail for up to 6 months and fine you. If your child goes into any public space, that means if your child steps off your personal property, they can be arrested. Now they're going to tag your child, and like the Chinese have been doing, they could shame your child. Or the next step is to mandate that your child be forcibly vaccinated, and if you withdraw that consent or don't want your child forcibly vaccinated, then you could be arrested. That's how bad. That's how totalitarian. So later in the week, I will be doing a one-hour commentary that I've written on how America today is a full-fledged police state. We are engaged in massive fascism, eugenics, and many other things. And before you think, well, that's not possible. I can go anywhere, fly anywhere, do anything, eat anything, see anything. That's not a problem, and you're absolutely right. And so, too, could you compare that to when they came for the communists and nobody cared because they weren't communist? And then they came for the Jews, but nobody was Jew in your building, and so you didn't care. But one day they came for you, and nobody cared. Do you know that there are over 600 dogs shot by police every 24 hours in the United States who did nothing? Why isn't that an issue? Do you realize how many that is at the end of the year? So we're going to deal with this in depth later on this week. This is just a test, what they're doing. They know it has no meaning and will prove it. But it's conditioning you. And do you know how easy Americans are to be conditioned into doing things against their own best interest? Weapons of mass destruction, Vietnam, and the domino effect. Oh yeah, Saddam Hussein, the worst person in the Middle East. No, there are a lot of worse persons in the Middle East. In fact, you'd have to include the entire Middle East, because there wasn't a single country that was without flaw on human rights and abuse of its citizens. But look at the consequences, because we didn't think for ourselves. Our media was gone, as our media is today, utterly corrupt at every level. So we'll be providing you with some in-depth information. Let's begin. Our first discussion today is about the idea that meat is good for you. No, it isn't. We have the studies showing it's bad. They have no studies, zero studies, in the peer-reviewed literature showing it's good for you. Here is from Loma Linda University. Eating small amounts of red and processed meats, there's your pizzas, can increase your risk of death. That's right, consuming even small amounts of red meat versus none can impact your mortality from all causes, especially cardiovascular disease. The NUMA study out of Loma Linda University suggests eating red and processed meats may increase the risk of death from all causes, and this study, entitled Red and Processed Meat and Mortality in a Low Meat Intake Population, is part of the health study, and it's a prospective cohort study of 96,000 Seventh-day Adventists, men and women, in the United States and Canada. They evaluated thousands of deaths over an 11-year period, and then they found when everything else is equalized, the amount of red meat a person consumes is directly related to how you die. A simple strategy to improve your mood in 12 minutes from Iowa State University. We have a remedy, they say, a glass of wine or a piece of chocolate for lifting our spirits when we're in a bad mood. Now, rather than focusing on ways to make ourselves feel better, a team of Iowa State University researchers suggest wishing others well. Walking around and offering kindness to others in the world reduces anxiety and increases happiness and feelings of social connection. How about that? And don't you feel better when you do something good for other people, even strangers? Our receptionist is from Jamaica, and she told me yesterday, she says, in Jamaica, we grow up being taught be mannered, be polite, and with a smile on your face, even to strangers, say good morning, good afternoon, good evening, small things that, and with a smile, to let you know that, you know, you're a human being, we're recognizing you. So walking around and offering kindness, even stopping with someone on the street who's homeless and listening to their story, it can make all the difference in the world. Not only will it reduce your anxiety and increase your happiness and feelings of social connection, but can help the other person. I'll give you an example. The other night, on my way back from downtown, and I like to walk from the office way down here in mid-Manhattan. I'm no longer on the Upper West Side where I was for over 27 years at 83rd and Broadway. But instead, I'm downtown, and I walk. And I walk through the theater district, and then I walk up Broadway past Lincoln Center and go for a stroll through Lincoln Center. Beautiful place architecturally and the energy. And there was a person, a man, I'm guessing in his 40s, sitting there, and he had no sign. He had a little cup, and he was reading. And I said, could I ask you a question? He said, sure. I said, how long have you been on the street? He said, 3 years. Where do you sleep? At a shelter downtown. How is that? He said, it's terrible. He said, the shelters are a joke. Everybody steals anything and everything they can. There's drugs. You can't sleep. People are snoring. It's noisy. And it's not a place you want to be. Where did you come from? I had a home and I had worked hard. What do you do? I'm an interior decorator. Okay. And I asked him the book he was reading. It was Albert Camus. So college educated and has great deal of student debt, couldn't pay it, and said he married. I made the mistake, the biggest mistake I made in my life was marrying to a wealthy person, a trust baby, he called her, where her family expected me to treat her the same way they had. I didn't have the money or resources to do it. I was working 18 hours a day, and no matter what I made, it was spent instantly with no appreciation of how hard I had to work. And finally, I just said, you know, this isn't working. And they agreed because I was beneath them. Anyhow, he had a chance to tell me a story for about a half hour. And I listened. And I gave the input I could. And I even told him that in the very near future, I'd be offering five individuals who are homeless that I will select an opportunity to have a home and have an opportunity to get their life back together with counseling, and no, they don't have to worry about food or clothing or anything else. I've taken in over almost 500 homeless people in my life, and I'm going to start taking in a few more in the summer. And you have to be careful. You have to really do your homework, because I've had some disasters happen also. People steal, and you don't know what you're getting, so you really have to use your intuition. But still, we all need to help those who are less fortunate than us, because there was a time when they weren't less fortunate. They had a home and a bed and a job or food, and now they don't. And we shouldn't walk by them as if somehow they're invisible. They're not. And so just that, it brought his whole spirits up. And I gave him my office number, and I said, you call and speak with this person in the next 2 weeks, and you'll come in and we'll sit down. And I helped him out. I didn't want him sleeping in a shelter. And couldn't we all do something? Something, even if it was just listening to a person's story. So that's what this study is saying. So that helps us with our depression or anxiety. And it gives us a sense of meaning, because we're helping give witness, bear witness to another person. Because all of us have a story that at some point we'd like to share. So just a suggestion. All right? So instead of distracting ourselves with television or the internet or friends that don't exist on the internet, why not go out and do something good for another human being? And they said in the study it only takes 12 minutes for all these loving kindness, looking at people to see and think to themselves, I wish for this person to be happy. From Toshima University in Japan, resveratrol suppresses the proliferation and induces apoptosis in programmed cell death, meaning it speeds up how quickly a cancer cell will die. So it has strong anti-cancer properties against tumors. Now, normally people take maybe 20 milligrams of resveratrol. I'm suggesting that we take 100 milligrams or more, because it's one of the most single, powerful, anti-inflammatory, anti-tumor, health-promoting, health-lengthening supplements we could take, resveratrol. From University of North Texas, curcumin, C-U-R-C-U-M-I-N, curcumin reduces muscle damage after you exercise. So by taking 400 milligram dose a day, I suggest more if you're sick, especially with cancer or mental problems. But for exercise, 400 milligrams a day can make a big difference in helping reduce muscle damage. So that's a big deal, because a lot of people exercise and then they get muscle soreness, and some end up with tears and rips and strains and sprains. This helps that. Also, from the University of Georgia, replacing sitting time with physical activity is associated with a lower risk of death. For those who get the least amount of physical activity, replacing a half hour of sitting time with physical activity was associated with up to a 50% reduction in death. That's a new study from the American Cancer Society. The study is appearing in the American Journal of Preventive Medicine. So again, please listen. If you replace a modest amount of sitting time with even light physical exercise, you have the potential to reduce the risk of premature death by almost 50%. All right? What can you do? Well, how about just going for a walk? You should not sit anywhere for more than 2 hours. When I'm on an airplane, which is a lot, I walk from one end of the plane to the other, and then when I go back to the back of the plane, I'll put my fingers against the back wall and or my hands, and then I'll do half squats, meaning I dip down on my staying on my toes and come back up on my toes. That's exercising the muscles, getting circulation going in the legs. You could do the same thing. And finally, from the University of California at Santa Cruz, teens who seek solitude may know what's best for them. Despite stigma, solitude doesn't have to be problematic for adolescents and young adults. So there's a lot of teens who we call shy. That's not a mental condition and shouldn't be treated as such, nor stigmatized. Teens who choose to spend just more alone time, they know what they want, and they should have the right to do that. It isn't a red flag for isolation or depression, as we've been led to believe. A key factor is choice. And when solitude is imposed upon adolescents and young adults, whether as punishment or as a result of social anxiety, it can be problematic. But choosing solitude, I choose solitude. What do you think I'm doing when I'm not here? I'm out alone in nature. I'm a farmer. My hands are in the soil. I'm planting and growing and hoeing and weeding. I'm on a tractor cutting. I'm on a bobcat moving. I'm planting trees. I'm working with animals. With animals, you have to choose solitude because you want to bond with the animal. Do you think there's something wrong with spending quality time with a loving, sentient creature? To the contrary. There's nothing more peaceful, especially in southern Florida where my ranch is sitting there with a wonderful 20-year-old capuchin. I've had her 19 and a half years. I got her as a rescue at 6 months. And she's just sitting there and just grooming herself. That's what they love to do. And you can hear her purring. We're looking up at a sky that's blue, and then pink clouds come in, and it's the sunset time. And you can hear the crackling of the palm tree, and then you hear the doves, of which there are hundreds. Well, that's just as close to manna as you can get. So solitude is important for all of us, yet most people are terrified of it because it only reinforces their sense of loneliness if they are starting at lonely. So for all you students out there or parents of students or friends, when people say they need to be alone, allow them the dignity of knowing what they're saying. Oh, and by the way, one last quick thing from Oregon State University. U.S. adults get failing grade in health lifestyle behavior. Only, ready for this? Please listen carefully. And this also applies to my audience. Only 2.7, under 3% of the U.S. adult population achieves all four of some of the basic behavior characteristics that researchers say would constitute healthy lifestyles and help protect against cardiovascular disease. That's right. That was done to the University of Mississippi and Oregon University, State University. So we're not doing what we need to do to be healthy. Only 2.7%. I thought it was closer to 5%. And therefore, I was optimistic, thinking that we've got about, in the United States, around 18 million Americans, based upon 232 million citizens, who are making positive choices. I was optimistic. It's 2.7%, which means that 98.3% of all adults are not making healthy choices. That's important. I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us.
Might understand you by and by. Just move on up toward your destination.
For those of you who just joined us, I'm Gary Noll. We are recording this because it's not connecting live with our Facebook feed, but we will post this on Facebook in about 45 minutes. I'm going to share with you now an original, in-depth investigative report on the CDC and the medical deep state. For over 20 years, American families have faced an unscrupulous foe that threatens the public health and welfare. It's a rogue, unmanageable institution within our federal government, now seemingly beholden solely to private corporate interest. Citizens have been horribly mistaken in believing that the nation's leading health agency, the CDC, Center for Disease Control, honors its mandate to protect the public from dangerous health threats, both domestic and foreign. We are expected to assume the CDC relies upon the most advanced and cutting-edge medical science and data to make its policy decisions. However, as our investigation will reveal and be documented, the agency's history is one of full-on corruption and fraud and malfeasance, and hence contradicts its own pledge as outlined on its website. Instead of protecting the health and security of our nation, the CDC uses bromides and meaningless pageantry to hide its true nature, a criminal organization. During the past year, especially in recent months, the fear-mongering spewing forth from the CDC has become virulent. It is a classic Orwellian script. The recent measles outbreak, although nowhere near as alarming as the flare-ups of bygone eras, has been seized upon as an opportunity to brainwash the public and reshape it into obedient livestock in order to increase vaccination compliance. Worse, this disinformation campaign ignores everything we know about measles infection and the failures of the MMR vaccine. Unfortunately, we are no longer permitted to debate the pros and cons of the measles vaccine. The CDC consistently shuts down debate when its decisions are challenged. Mainstream media will not allow an open debate. I would debate and have. Robert F. Kennedy would debate. And many, at least I know 10 medical doctors, all board certified, most pediatricians, who were all pro-vaccine, who now are not. Why not allow those of us who have the greatest depth of scholarship, who are scientists, who are clinicians, to debate? They won't. You can't get on any program. Instead, you're maligned by pro-vaccine individuals. Physicians, medical researchers, immunologists, and former vaccine advocates who challenge the loose claims for vaccine safety and efficacy are frustrated and eager to publicly debate the best vaccine advocates the CDC and vaccine industry have to offer. But not one will take up the challenge because the science is so clearly not on their side. The agency consistently fails to conduct and apply the gold standard of its own medical research and ignores the best independent peer review science. In short, the CDC is nothing more than an agency and a mouthpiece for the pharmaceutical industrial complex and operates for its own financial advantage rather than for the benefit of society. Its revolving doors are kept spinning with a constant influx of pharmaceutical industry and vaccine insiders. In fact, the lines separating corporate influence and public health are grossly blurred and distorted. It is no surprise that documents obtained through the Freedom of Information Act request paint the CDC as rotten to its core and one of the greatest health threats to the nation. The agency, in Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s words, quote, is a cesspool of corruption, end quote. What you will never hear in the mainstream media is that there is another medical institution that is supposed to have been granted the responsibility to assure the CDC receives quality and reliable scientific research to use as the basis for its healthcare decisions. the Institutes of Medicine, or the IOM, does not possess the CDC's legislative clout. However, it represents a far superior body of scientists and researchers in their medical fields. It was founded in 1970. The Institute of Medicine falls under the charter of the National Academy of Sciences, which was started by President Abraham Lincoln and Congress in 1863. The Academy was founded for the purpose of bringing together the nation's best scientific minds to advise the government on scientific matters. The Institute of Medicine was founded later to provide expert advice and reliable medical research to the White House and congressional legislators to guide their decisions, keeping them informed about the social, economic, and political impacts of health care. According to its principles, and unlike the CDC, the Institute of Medicine members deliberately are kept off vaccine research and policy panels if they have a conflict of interest. They cannot represent private interest. During a press conference this month at Yale University, the Children's Health Defense founder, Robert Kennedy Jr., presented data from his investigation into the CDC's culture of medical negligence and efforts to cover up the compelling evidence for vaccine-induced injuries, including autism. Over the course of 20 years, the Institute of Medicine has monitored and reviewed the medical literature to determine the most and least likely injuries associated with specific vaccines and provided recommendations to CDC. Let me give you examples, very specific examples that you've never heard before. In 1991, 22 illnesses were identified, 6 were confirmed as vaccine-related, and 12 remained uncertain due to insufficient reliable studies. So we're going back a long time, a quarter century, when they determined that vaccines cause illnesses. Yet did you hear that? No, you did not. That should have been front page headlines. Every pediatrician, every physician, every pharmacist, every nurse should have been told, as of 1991, we have 22 illnesses identified, 6 were absolutely confirmed for vaccine-related illnesses. We were told nothing, but the CDC was. Those cases were confirmed causation, including, listen to what they found in 1991, if you took a vaccine, here's what could happen. Disabilities, attention deficit disorder, and childhood diabetes, type 1 diabetes. This data was collected subsequent to President Ronald Reagan signing the National Vaccine Injury Act, Compensation Act, a point when autism rates began to climb exponentially. 3 years later, the Institute of Medicine identified 54 medical conditions. The medical literature supported 10 diseases as vaccine-induced. 38 were uncertain. But again, we have 10 confirmed diseases caused by the vaccines. Among the confirmed illnesses, seizures, demyelinating disease, which means multiple sclerosis, sterility, transverse myelitis, and for the first time, listen carefully, sudden infant death syndrome. That's correct. I actually helped a person get out of prison. He sent a little note, a little piece of paper, saying, please help me. I was put in prison for shaking my baby to death. I didn't touch my baby. I love my baby. But no one will look at my case. He was in deep confinement in a Florida prison for life. About a week later, I took a look at the note again, and I intuitively said I should reach out to this person, and I did. Couldn't reach him, but reached his wife. And then I went over to see her, and I got all the information I could. And from all that she told me, and I was subsequently able to find, everything that you could do wrong in investigation was done with this case. So I did an entire expose, brought in some lawyers, and we got him a new trial, and he was acquitted of everything and became a free human being. That story was in Vaccine Nation and Autism Made in USA. So, yes, a lot of sudden infant death. And now all over America, parents have been arrested for shaking their baby to death but we know that sudden infant death, or SIDS, occurred when they increased the vaccine schedule. Again, in 1911, the Institute of Medicine reported a whopping 155 adverse conditions with 16 vaccine-induced injuries supported by hard quality science, including a correlation between the DTP vaccine and autism. That's from the Institute of Medicine. Now, why is it that no one in the media, no one saying there is no connection between vaccines and autism, has ever gone back and found that the Institute of Medicine, which has a higher standard of accountability, a higher reference point of scientific accuracy, without the interference of the vaccine industry, they said that DTP vaccine was associated with autism. You've never seen it. You've never heard it because they covered it up. But it's there. We found it. Unfortunately, and this is a big problem now, the Institute of Medicine holds no official authority over our federal agencies. Consequently, its recommendations to the CDC to further investigate vaccines' adverse effects went unheeded. The CDC did nothing. And when I say nothing, I mean nothing. Today, nothing has changed at the CDC. It is a completely compromised, totally corrupt criminal organization. Instead, the agency has dug itself into a deeper hole of secrecy and corruption. With a budget of $11.5 billion and a pathetic $20 million designated for vaccine safety, the CDC is crying out for a thorough public audit. These early Institute of Medicine reports are extremely valuable, and we have captured all of them so that in case they're ever eliminated because of political pressure, we will still have them. They identify many of the same childhood diseases that have grown to epidemic proportions in the intervening years. And they indicate, and hence indict, vaccines as a causal factor. Yet, regrettably, the Institute of Medicine has recently showed, just recently, signs of becoming as compromised as other health agencies. It, too, may have become another pawn of the medical deep state that infiltrating every state legislative body that passed draconian immunization laws with the end goal of vaccinating every American, children and adult, and even threats of force if necessary, or incarceration if you say, no, I don't want to be vaccinated. Now just imagine, it's the left primarily in America that supports vaccination in the nanny state, and that's their right. But why don't they then voluntarily go up to Paul Offit, who said you could have, a child could have 10,000 vaccines at the same time with no harmful effects. And since they're so pro-CDC and pro-vaccination, and they attack those who challenge the safety and efficacy of vaccine, why don't they act as human guinea pigs? Why don't they say, sure, I believe so much in the government's trustworthiness and Big Pharma's trustworthiness. Vaccinate me as an example. Give me 1,000 vaccines. I'd like to see that. What do you think is going to happen when every adult is mandated to have vaccine, or you can't go into a public space? You can't go on the sidewalk, can't go to a store, can't travel. Do you think that that is too far off? I believe it's very near at hand, because they're already doing, as we'll discuss in a few moments, in Rockland County. That's just a test balloon. For example, in a 2013 report on the safety of the CDC's childhood immunization schedule, the Institute of Medicine gave its stamp of approval while ignoring the fact that no vaccine trial, except for a poorly designed Gardasil trial, has conducted safety tests with a scientifically valid placebo. Meaning that if you're testing one vaccine, you should test it against a saline solution, a saltwater solution, where neither person knows what they're getting. They're not doing that. They're testing one vaccine against another vaccine or an adjuvant like mercury and another vaccine. Well, both vaccines have mercury. It's not a valid study, and the Institute of Medicine scientists know that. That's why we're very concerned that they have been compromised. Nor are there credible and reliable studies to support claims that no synergistic health risks arise from administering multiple vaccines concurrently, meaning one vaccine, okay, what if you give 20 vaccines all at once? They've never once done a study of all the ingredients tested for its toxicity in every vaccine synergistically given. There's no such study. It doesn't exist. then how in the world can you possibly put these toxins, mercury, for example, aluminum, polysorbate 80, formaldehyde, latex, aborted fetal cells, into a child when you have done no studies on the long-term effects or short-term effects of the all of these synergistic components together? Now the Institute of Medicine, too, is basing its conclusions on junk corporate science. Its recent reports also omit reviews of the scientific literature that note the toxicity of the aluminum adjuvant used in many vaccines, including the MMR. Recent research conducted by Dr. Chris Exley at Keele University in the United Kingdom has uncovered the pathways by which high amounts of vaccine aluminum accumulate in brain tissue rather than being excreted. High brain aluminum levels were found to decrease a lot of the activity in the brain and also was manifesting in autistic children's tissues. In fact, when autistic children died and they donated their body for research, autistic children were having as much as 1,000% more aluminum lodged in their brains compared to a normal child. The CDC's crimes are a matter of public record. These are not secrets or confidential information. The documents and voices of whistleblowers within the CDC are readily found on the Internet to support all of our charges against the agency. They are readily available to anyone who wishes to investigate, and Congress knows this. The legislators are not working on your behalf. Both Democrats and Republicans have refused to allow one such person, Dr. William Thompson, who can prove, because he was one of the leaders of covering up adverse effects of the MMR vaccine on African-American young boys with an over 250% increase in autism spectrum disorder. They won't bring him in to have him testify under oath, because if he did so, the entire agency would collapse. The entire agency. That's how powerful the medical deep state and its mouthpiece is to deceive the public. They've allowed that not to happen. The CDC misconduct includes widespread corporate nepotism favoring private pharmaceutical interests, illegal destruction of clinical data that showed a correlation between the MMR vaccine and 250% increased risk in autism in African-American boys, hiring a criminal to conduct fraudulent research to conceal the neurological risks of mercury-containing vaccines, the silencing of internal officials and whistleblowers, serving as a go-between on behalf of the beverage industry concerning the World Health Organization's restriction on sugar soft drinks. The CDC has fudged firearm safety statistics. That report led Harvard University Injury Control, a research center director, David Hemingway, to declare that no one should trust the CDC's estimates. And during the 1970s, it was the CDC's Dr. Colleen Boyle who covered up the hideously toxic nature of Agent Orange and dioxin that thousands, even millions of Vietnam War veterans were exposed to. I know, because I had more than 121 of my programs on WMCA and WBAI where Paul Rudishan, representing the interest of vets who had been injured by Agent Orange and dioxin, come on and make their case. And we were part of that, and the effort to get compensation that finally happened 20 years after all were injured. And it was a token that they received. But that is the same Colleen Boyle. And although the Institute of Medicine and Congress revealed Boyle's scheme, the agency duly rewarded her loyalty with a promotion. The CDC and the vaccine industry have been colluding for a long time. In 2004, Congress accused the CDC of operating as a public relations firm for private interest, and rather than as a watchdog ensuring the integrity of vaccine science. That same year, the U.S. Office of Special Counsel uncovered potential evidence that the CDC and the pharmaceutical companies were destroying data linking the vaccine preservative thimerosal, which is mercury, with neurological disorders. Senator Tom Coburn's expose reveals the agency's widespread budgetary mismanagement has wasted millions of tax dollars and concludes that the CDC cannot demonstrate it is controlling disease. In October 2017, Congressperson Bill Posey of Florida sent a letter to then-Attorney General Jeff Sessions calling on him to resume efforts to extradite and prosecute Dr. Paul Thorson for money laundering over $1 million from the CDC. The catch is, listen carefully, that Thorson was contracted by the CDC to conduct fraudulent research in Denmark that would mask, hide, cover up any association between the vaccine preservative thimerosal and mercury and autism. In 2011, Thorson was placed on the Inspector General's most wanted list. Nevertheless, the CDC at the same time and subsequent has continued to erect obstacles to extradite Thorson. More worrisome, Representative Posey discovered that for at least 3 years after the FBI issued its arrest warrant, the CDC and the National Institutes of Health continued to collaborate with Thorson and even joint published more junk science together. Another misadventure involving the CDC provided erroneous data to Congress about its own women's health program, Wise Woman, commissioned to provide preventative health services to women between 40 and 65 to reduce cardiovascular disease. Native Americans were also targeted for assistance in the program. The data was cooked and enrolled far less women than the CDC reported to Congress, and these ethical violations are systemic throughout the agency, and Congress has been paralyzed in any efforts to rein in the rottenness that saturates the agency's leadership. In 2016, a group of scientists within the agency submitted a letter. Now, mind you, these are inside scientists over their concerns that the CDC's chief of staff, quote, "We are a group of scientists at the CDC that are very concerned about the current state of ethics at our agency. It appears that our mission is being influenced and shaped by outside parties and rogue interests. What concerns us most is that it is becoming the norm and not the rare exception. Some senior management officials at the CDC are clearly aware and even condone these behaviors. Others see it as another way. Some staff are intimidated and pressed to do things they know are not right," end quote. Out of fear of retribution, this group of CDC employees filed their complaint anonymously. And over the years, congressional subcommittees have voiced warnings to CDC officials to clean up their act. A House Government Reform Committee reported that both the CDC and FDA's advisory committees for vaccines were thoroughly corrupted and compromised with pharmaceutical conflicts of interest. Paul Offit, the poster boy of vaccine McCarthyism and a darling of the mainstream media, participated in closed-door sessions to draft a rotavirus vaccine recommendation for a vaccine Offit co-developed and eventually sold to Merck for $180 million. Another voting advisory committee member held a patent on a viral rotavirus vaccine. Neither advisory committee complies with the Federal Advisory Committee Act, which requires a diversity of medical opinions. Instead, the committees are stacked with corporate shills advocating for fast-tracking, poorly developed vaccines with insufficient and untrustworthy safety and efficacy data to otherwise support their approval. In 2009, the Office of the Inspector General conducted an investigation of conflicts of interest within the CDC. The office discovered that 97%, let me repeat this, listen carefully. The Inspector General of the CDC found that 97% of its advisors failed to declare their links to the pharmaceutical industry. Consider for the moment the kinds of people who have held the CDC directorship in recent years. Brenda Fitzgerald, MD, one of Trump's short-lived appointments. She resigned after 5 months due to conflicts of interest with the tobacco industry and investing in a Japanese tobacco company while in office. Dr. Tom Friedman, MD, appointed by Obama, resigned and founded the Resolve program funded by Mark Zuckerberg and Bill Gates Foundations. In 2018, Friedman was charged with one count of sex abuse and a count of second-degree harassment. Dr. Julie Gerberding, appointed by Bush following her success in getting Merck's human papillomavirus vaccine Gardasil fast-tracked through the regulatory hurdles. She joined Merck and was, I don't know what she's doing today, but she was the president of its vaccine division with a $2.5 million annual salary and $38 million in stock options. So the Nuremberg trials indicated that Nazi doctors should be held accountable for crimes against humanity for conducting inhumane experiments with highly toxic drugs on innocent people. Yet, the code generated by Nuremberg does not apply to modern vaccines such as the human papillomavirus vaccine, Gardasil, and Dr. Bernard Delbrugo used to work for Gardasil's manufacturer, Merck, in an interview with the French magazine, Desarly. He said that Merck, quote, fully knows the vaccine is worthless in protecting against cervical cancer. He stated, quote, I predict that Gardasil will become the greatest medical scandal of all times because at some point in time, the evidence will add up to prove that this vaccine, technical and scientific feat that it may be, has absolutely no effect on cervical cancer. The very many adverse effects will destroy lives and even kill and serve no other purpose than to generate profit for the manufacturer, end quote. That was one of the people who made it. Did you hear about that? Has he been invited by CNN or MSNBC? No. Nobody wants to hear the truth from someone who was there at the beginning, helped create a vaccine, who says it's going to kill people, injure, and have no benefit. Meanwhile, the National Institutes of Health profits from Gardasil sales with royalties and will benefit more as the vaccine is mandated by state legislators. We have deep reservations towards accusing the federal health agencies of engaging in a revival of eugenic technologies. But we have to ask a question, just to consider. A recent analysis published in the Journal of Toxicology and Environmental Health reveals a lowered probability of pregnancy among American women between 25 and 29 years of age who have received the human papillomavirus vaccine. And since the launch of Gardasil, birth rates have been falling for women 25 to 29 within the age range of the new Gardasil generation. Rates fell from 118 in 1,000 to 105. This may appear coincidental, and it may be. However, 60% of unvaccinated women became pregnant at least once, compared to only 35% who received the human papilloma vaccine. For married women, 75% who were unvaccinated conceived versus 50% of vaccinated women. The study suggests that if 100% of women had received the human papilloma vaccine, there would be 2 million more women more likely to be infertile. We have reported in the past how the CDC operates more like a private intelligence and surveillance firm rather than a federally funded public health service. In the meantime, epidemics of autism, neurodevelopmental disorders, autoimmunity, childhood diabetes, febrile seizures, asthma, and allergies roll on, and federal health officials embrace the superstitions of vaccine magic and reside in a culture of medical denialism. And finally, it is a fundamental question. Would you hire someone with such an extensive rap sheet to care for your child, let alone a newborn infant? Would you trust them, knowing how vile, corrupt that they are, to undertake the correct measures in an emergency, or use sound judgment to assure your child's well-being? For the hundreds of thousands of vaccine-injured children, actually it's millions now, the CDC remains a felon on the loose, and the rest of our government is less competent than inebriated Keystone cops to authorize a thorough house cleaning. Will there be changes? No. Will there be reforms? No. Will anybody be held accountable? No. Will they get away with it? Yes. Will more children die? Will more young teenage girls taking Gardasil be injured for life and paralyzed and die? Yes. Will the 7 million parents be less shamed for speaking out after their children were damaged? No, they'll be more condemned. That's the society we live in. That is not going to change. It cannot change because those in power will not allow it to change. I'm Gary Noll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. Just yesterday, there was a situation in Rockland County where, from what I'm told, two persons coming back from a trip were not vaccinated and spread the measles vaccine. And now Rockland County has put everyone on notice as of midnight last night that any person who is unvaccinated, any young person unvaccinated, is in effect quarantined. They can't go into public places. And they even used a draconian law that they said they may or may not use, where parents could go to jail for 6 months and be fined. Well, that assumes that an unvaccinated child, it is proven that they represent a threat to the vaccinated ones. We'd like to see their science. We challenge them on it. We also challenge them that the people having the measles are at epidemic level, and therefore this is a national public interest. Richard Gale is in the studio now. Richard, tell us what you have found so we can correct the record here.
Yeah, good afternoon, Gary. All over the media we're hearing how the measles is so deadly. But the U.S. risk of mortality related to measles infection is as close to zero as you can get. If we look at during the last night, since 2003, there have only been three measles deaths in the United States. What were they? One was a 75-year-old man in 2003 who contracted the measles in Israel and just so happened to come to the U.S. and died. That's one. That same year, there was a 13-year-old boy who was severely immune compromised, and he contracted measles 3 months after he had a bone marrow transplant. Then again, in 2015, there was a middle-aged woman, again with a severely immunocompromised immune system, who died of measles, or died of pneumonia, but during the autopsy, it was discovered she had measles. So they ruled it as a measles death. So those are the only three deaths from a wild measles, and we're not even certain whether they're wild. These could be, the measles vaccine is a live virus, which means that it can shed. A person who is either not properly protected from the vaccine, MMR vaccine, or who is unvaccinated, is at risk from somebody who's been recently vaccinated with the MMR vaccine. So we're looking, if we compare this with what the injuries and damage have been done from the measles vaccine itself, we're looking at, according to the VAERS database, that's the CDC's database for vaccine injuries, there have been 89,000 adverse effects from the measles vaccine and 445 deaths.
Okay, let's stop right there for a second. I want you to clarify that. For those of you listening, in the last almost two decades, we've only had three people die of measles. And we're not sure that those should have been attributed, at least two of them, to measles, because one had a collapsed immune system. And also, we have had over 400 people die from the vaccine. So just imagine three from measles and 400 from the vaccine. That should be very relevant to people, that the vaccine is the primary cause of death. Also, the side effect on the label, because I've read the label, is measles. So get the measles vaccine and you get the measles. Also, for several weeks afterwards, you can shed the measles through breathing, through your saliva, and through mucus on your hands. So you go to school after you got a measles shot, people think you're safe, and you're not. You're spreading that virus all over the place. Mm-hmm.
What's really disturbing is then if we're looking at, well, These measles outbreaks like we're experiencing now, these are the smoking guns that the health officials use in order to push forward the vaccine mandates and for groups even like ALEC to be able to push them through
the American legislative legislators.
And when the CDC's vaccine information statement concerning MMR says that there are some people should not get this vaccine. Now, but what is some? Does that mean 0.0001%? Is it 10%? Is it 20%?
Are you aware of anyone in America who says, and UPS is going to start doing vaccines, you can walk into any Walmart, any drugstore in America and get a vaccine. They never ask you, are you immunocompromised?
Right, which meaning that if these vaccines are being mandated across the board, it's one size fits all, we will experience a dramatic increase in vaccine injuries because many of these children who are going to be forced to take vaccines in order to go to school or to go to pre-K are required to take this vaccine when they should not be taking this vaccine. And so the vaccine itself poses a much, much greater risk than just a measles infection. And the measles infection is really, this is not, this doesn't, 90% of them don't require medical care. You know, I mean, you get a rash, you can't do anything about it. It's well known that just high doses of vitamin A will lessen the effects of the infection. In countries where measles is deadly, in poor developing countries, these are also the same countries that have very high vitamin A deficiency. That's why they're trying to create a golden rice to be able to provide greater vitamin A to these populations. And, you know, diarrhea, that's easy to manage. You can manage ear infections. You can manage that. So it's a manageable disease that doesn't require much in terms of medical care. But
now,
we're hearing that it's life-threatening.
Why don't we hear some of the other things that are life-threatening and injurious to children that they're not making an emergency? Give us examples.
Well, they should be considering just a suicide, which is now the second leading cause of death amongst, you know, 10 to teenagers up to and through college years. There's been, 45,000 total since 2016, over 6,100 just in the young teen group. We're looking at now there are kids that are dying as young as 5 years from opioid drugs. There's been about 450 deaths from opioid drugs just in the five-year range of people. Car crashes, 20% of deaths are from...
For one thing. Suicides, that mm-hmm. is a national emergency. Opiate deaths, that's a national emergency, especially in young people who are not taking it for pain but taking it for recreation. So we have children dying by the tens of thousands. Mm-hmm. There's not a word about it, no preventative actions, no looking at the deeper causes, no open debate on it, and yet... Three deaths in 20 years from vaccines, and suddenly Rockland County goes nuts. To me, in my personal opinion, this is nothing more than a political ploy to start to condition the American public that when the CDC and local authorities and state authorities say we have an epidemic of something or pandemic of something, even if there's no one dying, mm-hmm. that it's a way to mandate everyone get the vaccine.
I would agree, and I think that the authorities also know that the U.S. Is being positioned, because of climate change, for dengue, other kinds of illnesses that are going to be coming up, which are very severe.
They are
and
very
dangerous,
severe.
You know,
I agree.
So, but this is okay. All just part of the brainwashing.
Thank you, Richard.
Okay, Gary.
Again, this is one place where you can come and get accurate, honest science and public health. After all, remember, my doctorate is in human nutrition and multi-dimensional public health science, as is Richard Gale's background as well. He worked in the vaccine industry, by the way, as a scholar and scientist. So we will always be honest with you. Not so much for the rest of the media. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.